I mean, I was bullied relentlessly for years in junior high and wouldn't have survived, I think, if my mom hadn't convinced my dad to sell the house and we moved out of the city. I know very deeply what it's like to have been bullied. And when I think about it, the teachers telling the other kids off never did anything, trying to protect me, never did anything. When I really think about it, I think that if those kids had been able to see me as a person and helped me to see them again as a person, I think we could have seen each other. I think we could have shifted things, but it's such a radically different way of dealing with. Now you're talking about getting out of the punitive mindset. This is getting out of the punitive mindset, right? If my kid was being bullied, I would want to walk into the school and say, I want a meeting with the other parents and the kids, and I want to connect, and I want to understand each other, and I want to share our hearts with each other. And I would want that kind of a meeting, and I would ask for it to be mediated, because it seems to me that that kind of interaction is the only thing that's going to make long-term change. Because when we approach it from the same mindset as the problem, we're just amplifying it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast. It's me, Sujai Johnston, and I'm here today with my wonderful and beloved friend and colleague, Vivek Patel. Hi, Vivek. How are you doing today?
I am great, Sujai. I am happy to be here recording with you. We didn't record last week because I was going through some emotional stuff and I just didn't have the capacity. And I'm slowly in my life learning to direct my energy in intelligent and effective ways so that I focus myself on kind of like getting through last week. So I'm happy to, I missed you, but I'm happy to be here again with you this week.
I missed you too, and I'm really excited to be here again today. And I'm excited about the topics that we bring to the table. They really intertwine really well. We're going to talk today about power dynamics, and we're also going to talk about bullying, which I think that the two are, so deeply intertwined. And in fact, I'll let you go first talking about power dynamics, but I've got to say that I'll be supporting and joining you in the discussion on power dynamics. And I'm really interested to see how that interchanges and unfolds with my discussion on bullying, because like I was saying, they're just so amazingly intertwined. And really, when we break things down into smaller, more bite-sized pieces, I think the two, we might not have one without the other.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm excited to hear what you have to say about power dynamics.
Thank you. Yeah, I think power struggles are something that almost every parent that comes to us has issues with, struggles with. You and I, we admin a group called Gentle Parents Unite, coincidentally the same name as our podcast, and it has over 60,000 members. I think we're over 62 now, and we work with an amazing, you are the founder of the group. How many years ago? When was it founded?
I believe it was either January 12th or January 14th of 2015. Well, I can double check that real quick. But
It's got to be earlier than 2015.
2015, I believe.
I joined in 2015.
In 2014. I can pull up those stats real quick.
But it's been since then, and we've grown quite a bit. When I joined back in 2015, we had 11,000 members, and so now we're at 62. That's a lot of growth. That's like 1,000 members, 10,000 members a year. That's pretty amazing. And I think one of the reasons for that is because this group, the philosophy of the group, is held very, very specifically and very, very moderated, with a lot of kindness and a lot of attention. It's a beautiful group. And power struggles is one of the things. With 60,000 people, we get to see a lot of parents share their problems every day. Hundreds of questions come to us every day. And we also, of course, we also do intimate work with the parents that we support in our membership space as well. And in all of that, power struggles, it wears at the soul. It hurts. It hurts parents. They're like, how do I get out of power struggles with my kids? And, a lot of the time what happens is parents don't work at getting out of the power struggles. until they're in a desperate situation. And so then, of course, then it's really challenging. And then you have to do all this backtracking. You have to like do all this healing. You have to let go of old patterns and establish new patterns, which I'm going to talk a little bit about how to do that. And so a lot of time it's hard to even think about making those changes because they're so big. But the thing is, if we do that work and we start to shift power struggles and turn things that were power struggles, which of course come from an unequal power dynamic, if we can shift those, then everybody in the house feels more a part of the community and everybody feels more connected. Now, you know, power struggles are, a lot of the time parents think it's primarily the kid's problem because they're just not listening. And this is, kids don't listen. This is, again, I mean, like, I want to say kids don't listen, but one of the most common questions we get is, help me, my kid won't listen. And I think it's more about the concept of, should kids listen? What does it mean to listen? When we say listen, we mean obey without thought. Obey without arguing, without talking back, you know, and that's just not how human nature works. It'd be lovely if our kids would just do everything we said. I say somewhat facetiously, but in the history of the world, that's just not how it is. They might be afraid to. That's not really devoid of power struggles at that point. You still have the power differential. You still don't have a kid who's part of a community, who is caring about their decisions, who's doing things because they know it's the right thing. Trouble. So I want to talk a bit about the specifically some of the damaging effects of power struggles when we don't do the work, the very challenging work, I want to emphasize, when we don't do the very challenging work of shifting power struggle patterns. But what are we doing if we don't do that? What are we do? What's the problem? What's the harm of allowing power struggles, other than that it's just upsetting, you know? But if it's just upsetting, maybe you could grit your teeth and bear it for 18 years, and then your kids go off into the world. But it's deeper than that. When we have power struggles with our kids, it decreases trust in their relationship with us. Because if they know that when they are trying to express their power, find their power, get their needs met, even if they're not doing it, you know, in a very elegant way, because often kids don't, but when they're trying to do it, if they feel that they have to come up against a power structure in you, they're not going to be able to trust you. They're always going to have to keep one eye open. When is that power going to come out? When is that control going to come out? When am I going to be treated with respect? And when am I suddenly not? And there's no way for them to know that, because we don't really have a very clear way of knowing that ourselves, because most of it is emotional anyways. And so then they don't really trust us. It's hard for them to come to us. It's hard for them to be vulnerable with us. And if we want them to, if we want to be able to help them with some of their deepest stuff, we want them to be very vulnerable with us. You know, when I'm with my kid, anytime I notice that she's hesitant to be vulnerable with me, I go full on introspection and extrospection and looking at the situation and how, and it happened to me just recently. She told me maybe a year ago, and I made a video about it, like a year ago, she told me that there was something she wanted to tell me, but she was hesitating and it took her a couple of weeks to get to tell me. Now this is me, right? Who I work so hard at creating a safe, trusting relationship. It's natural. Those things happen. I don't beat myself up for it, but I started thinking really deeply, what can I shift? What can I change? What can I say? What can I do to increase that trust and comfort? And I, amazingly enough, like 2 months later, maybe 2 or 3 months later now, just in the last 2 or 3 weeks, all of a sudden noticed her sharing much more vulnerable things than she had been recently. And I hadn't really noticed it, but I can really feel the difference. And it's because I put that work into it. And it's that trust. So trust is an ever-evolving thing. And power struggles certainly are one of the things that degrade trust. Another thing that power struggles do is it gives the message of conditional love and acceptance. I love you more when you act like this. I love you less when you act like that. You're worth of my attention and my connection more when you act like this, and you're worth it less when you act like that. And suddenly it creates this inner relationship where part of me is good and part of me is bad, and part of me is acceptable and part of me isn't. And when we do that, that means we have to push away the part and not look at the part and not have a loving, collaborative, caring relationship with the part of us that, you know, might be challenging. I always talk about that we want to accept our kids' emotions completely. We want to accept their feelings and perceptions unconditionally. It doesn't mean we don't help them learn how to manage it and learn how the world works. It doesn't mean that. But the message from us of love and acceptance being not unconditional, not based on their behavior, is so important for their sense of themselves as they move forward. Otherwise, yeah, then they put that on other people too.
You know, I'm really glad you're talking about that. And just to add a little bit to it, I think it's really important for us to also embrace that full spectrum of human emotion. You know, we're so used to only looking at our so-called positive emotions and the spectrum of emotions that society sees as acceptable, such as happy, joyous, excited, content, peaceful. And we also offer ourselves very conditional love based on those ideas that any of our less than comfortable feelings, if we're feeling angry, if we're feeling frustrated, if we are feeling vindictive or betrayed or wanting to lash out or sad or any of these things, then that actually makes us a bad person and we shouldn't be feeling those feelings. And we try to push them away. Unfortunately, the backlash of trying to push away feelings that are uncomfortable is that those feelings, when they're not addressed, they tend to get louder and louder because they don't exist in a funnel. They're not there for no reason. And if we're ignoring the reason that we're there and continuing to move forward in life, chances are the feeling is just going to get louder and louder to a point where we're feeling a lot of distress around that feeling. And we can manage working through the feeling with a lot more understanding of ourselves and grace if we can acknowledge that that feeling is there for a reason and find ways to work with it. And not offer ourselves, and you know, particularly our children, it's so important too that we're not offering our children conditional love based on behaviors, particularly withdrawing love around, you know, difficult things that they might be struggling with. But it's so important that we can hold that space for ourselves too and see clearly and to see clearly the reasons why we might be acting out or behaving in certain ways around certain feelings. And maybe with a little bit more clarity, we can make different choices in the way that we move forward and pursue those feelings. I think it's really important for people to almost lose the idea of good person versus bad person and embrace the idea that we're all humans doing the best that we can. And we have this broad spectrum of human experiences, and we're not always going to respond or react or manage a situation in the way that we might feel most in our integrity or we might feel strongest about. You know, we're going to make mistakes and we're going to fall short. And embracing and accepting that in ourselves is a really big part of being able to embrace and hold space for and accept that in our children.
Yeah, for sure. And when we, you know, when we grow up without that, we will spend much of our lives seeking an external approval for our okayness, you know, seeking external approval for our, because we need to be told we're good from the outside. And so, I mean, I certainly was like that for most of my life. That's why I ended up running around with a rough crowd when I was in my teens, because they gave me the kind of acceptance that I was seeking. And even though it ended up being quite a toxic thing, because I got into all sorts of trouble, which I'm not going to put put on the audio here, but I got into all sorts of trouble in my teen years, largely because of that, you know? And so when we do that work on ourselves so that we can help our kids have that sense of themselves, they will be much less likely to be seeking that kind of validation from the external, because they'll feel it inside themselves, you know? And, but it's challenging, for sure. It's challenging because power struggles, when we get into power struggles with our kids, we think it's adult versus child. Definitely the versus is in there. You know, that's part of the power struggle. We think it's power versus adult versus child, but it's actually much more complex than that. Because for me, as an adult, I'm also operating from my inner child. And what that means is the patterns and the pain and the trauma and the experiences and the inaccurate beliefs about myself and the world and communication and relationships that I picked up and were imposed upon me when I was a child, values that I thought were my own that really weren't. When I have all this stuff imposed upon me as a child, and then I try and figure out who I am as an adult, it's not really me. I don't know who I am, you know? And so because I don't know who I am, I need to seek that okayness from the outside. But if I know those things about myself from the inside out, if I know my values, if I know who I am, if I know that essentially I am good, even when I make a mistake, you know, even though it's like, I dig the idea of taking out the good, bad mindset altogether. But let's use it for a moment, because a lot of us are working our way out of it. That, you know, if I just accept that I'm essentially good, then the inside, you know, then I'm not seeking approval from others. It doesn't mean I don't care about the experience of others. In fact, I do more, because I'm not afraid I'm not afraid they're not going to accept me. Me, I operate largely from a perspective of I'm afraid people aren't going to accept me. Like just the other day, we had men this big Facebook group, like we talked about. And a lot of the time, what happens is on a post, maybe one of the admin team will be in there, will be talking to people, and then it'll be too much emotionally, or something will trigger them, or it'll be hard. And then we come to the admin team and we say, can someone else sub in for me? And then that's a really beautiful way we do teamwork over there. And this happened to me the other day. I went in and I said, I'm on this post and I'm getting upset, and I don't want to respond from a place of upset, because then I'll say something that's not educational and I'll just be lashing out. Can someone jump in? And one of the members did jump in, and or offered to jump in. One of the other admin offered to jump in. And what happened was they were taking a bit of time, and so I reminded them. And as soon as I reminded them, I was full of all of this self-doubt. I was like, oh, they're not going to like me. They think I'm pushing me. And I ran to them really nicely, because I was like, I know it's really hard thing, and if you don't want to do it, it's okay, because I'll do it myself. I don't mind. I know you're really busy. I was really, really, really like that. So it's not like I was pushing. And I had all this insecurity come up. They don't like me. They think I'm pushy. Why would they do this? And all this kind of stuff. And me, because of my practice, because I've been doing this kind of inner work for many, many years, I saw it, thankfully. And I exposed it to her, and I said, hey, I just was thinking these things, and isn't it interesting how the mind gives us these thoughts? But the fact is, I was able to see the insecure 13-year-old that thought he had no friends because he was being bullied all the time. And I could see the insecure 8-year-old where almost nobody came to his birthday party and rarely ever got invited. And I can see all these different ages inside of me crying out for acceptance and fear of losing this connection in that moment. So it's not just adult me, 51, sitting here okay on his couch. There's a whole lot of other me's in there that are always interacting. And so when and then she said, oh, and I got worried that you would think I was not caring about you and abandoning your needs, because it took me a little time to get to it and you thought that I wouldn't care. So we both had these early stuff ideas come to us and patterns come to us. And she was very happy, actually, that I brought it up, because they were able to then see it for themselves. And so those patterns, they get set early. We can also work with our kids so they don't have those patterns, you know? So instead of learning, because power struggles, when we hold tight to our end of that, they learn this whole thing about power structures, you know? They learn this whole thing about their place in the world. When I tell kids that they're not less valid than adults, they don't believe me at first. Most kids, you know, whenever I have a chance to interact with a kid, and I tell them that their worth is the same as adults, that they're worth the same respect as adults, most of the time they don't believe me at first. And I have to actually convince them that, yes, in fact, your value as a human being is worth exactly the same as an adult. You're not less worthy of respect. And it takes them a while, but often they get it, you know. And I think that's one of the beautiful things when we shift our mindset and let go of the power struggle, that we help our kids see their unconditional worth. And then they see, when they see it in themselves, they naturally see it in others, because that's how it works.
You know, for me, I think power struggles are really an interesting thing, because I think that society creates power dynamics right from the get-go. We're very much taught that power dynamics, that power will come to us through a couple of different places. Some of that will be earned, and some of that is more just kind of arbitrary. It happens with time and age. Happens with, you know, having a family of your own and things like that, where you come into your places of power within society, right? And some of it will be earned through self-achievements and financial achievements, and how far through this systematic power structure a person is able to get. I find power dynamics incredibly harmful at all levels. And I think that they really start in parenting. You know, they start with the way that we override autonomy, the way that we override boundaries, the way that we don't allow children to have a voice, an opinion. You know, we shut them down. And when a child has an opinion, we call it backtalking. We say it's rude and disrespectful. And if they want to hold a boundary, like they don't want to go to Thanksgiving dinner, you know, we tell them that that's rude and disrespectful, and they need to be loving of their family. And we drag them along to Thanksgiving dinner. And then once we get to Thanksgiving dinner, we override their autonomy and, you know, force them to stand there and allow all these different family members to kiss their cheeks and touch their bodies in ways that they don't feel really comfortable with. And
yeah, kiss your aunties and uncles, Vivek.
That's
go
right.
Give it, go give it, we're going now. Go give everybody a hug.
Right, exactly. And, you know, even when you don't want to, and if you chose to hold a boundary around that, then you would be called rude and disrespectful and, you know, be asked to go ahead and do that anyways, even though you're holding a clear boundary around it. And I think that it sets us up. First of all, those are relational tools. They're unhealthy relational tools, but they are relational tools. And that's what we're handing to children, is when I have the physical size or the systematic power, I get to make decisions like this for you.
Mm.
And so the backlash of that is that's what our children are learning, is that as soon as they're big enough, as soon as they have a little bit of the systematic power, then they get to make decisions for somebody else. And when they're doing that, this is really the difficult thing, is that we as adults, when we do that, when we override their autonomy and override their boundaries and override their right to say no and their right to have an opinion and their right to choose and all of this stuff, we get more aggressive and heavy-handed in the way that we hold those boundaries. And we feel like we're justified in going, okay, well, you know, this person, our child, has completely disregarded what we're saying, and they're not doing it. They're not listening. And we get into this power struggle, and we're literally, a power struggle is characterized by push and shove. And it's going to be by the person who can push the hardest or keep the other person oppressed and down. That's literally the characterization of this thing that we're looking at, really big on this broad, like, picture. And so when we have systematic power over somebody, whether that's because we're a parent and we're in a place of power, or whether that's because we have financial power over them, or some kind of other physical or mental, emotional type of a power over somebody, and we're using that to control them, then that's what we're also teaching as those tools for interacting. And it all comes down to, when you don't do what I want, I'm going to push a little harder until I can hold you exactly where I want to hold you, and then I'm going to win this thing. And unfortunately, so many people, like a majority of the world, gets to a place where You know, and I've done a lot of working around power struggles myself, and how you remove yourself from like adult power struggles with somebody who could be being abusive towards you, which is a situation that I've been in. And yet the more that the power struggle went on, the more scary and abusive the situation got. And the more I needed to remove myself from that power struggle, because they were just going to keep pushing back harder until they finally had me oppressed. And there was no way to remove myself from this perpetuating cycle of I'm stronger than you versus you're stronger than me versus push and shove, than to remove yourself from it. And at some point we have to find safe ways to remove ourselves from those power struggles.
Yeah.
Because once you're locked and engaged as adults into power struggles, there's a lot of danger that goes on there. It's not a safe place for any person that's existing within that power struggle. And we really don't want to pass that down to our children as a relational tool. There's so many other beautiful ways we can relate with our loved ones without it being a power struggle, without it being a my way or the highway, and without it being somebody wins, and without it being, you know, you listen to me. We want to collaborate. We want to consciously work together with people. We want to communicate. We want to recognize people's needs and hear people and see people and help. And, you know, together we work through all of this stuff. And if we're not caught in a power, if we're caught in a power struggle, we can't see past the self-defensive, I need to block from that next shove or shove back harder so that I can get on the top of this power struggle. If we can pass what we're able to do, then instead is collaborate a solution that works for everybody. There are so few situations in the world where there isn't a collaborative solution that works for everybody. Even sometimes if, for example, just like in adult power struggles, even sometimes the solution being maybe we need to have more boundaries with that person and remove ourselves a little bit more from that person's life so that we're not at a vantage point where we can be locked in a power struggle with them. There are collaborative solutions for removing ourselves from those situations without opening ourselves to, you know, proverbially get punched in the face by their next strike. And it's very much the same with parent-child dynamics. We don't have to continue to push and push and push simply to get our way. We can take a step back, and we can find a way to either collaboratively meet in the middle, or, you know, we might find that we're not as strongly opposed as we originally thought we are, or they might find that they weren't as strongly wanting to oppose or whatever as they originally thought they were. Because once we remove ourselves from pushing and shoving and blocking and pushing and blocking, then we're able to see the human and work together on this really like cognitive responsive level of dealing with the situation at hand and the humans that are involved in that situation.
Yeah, and you know, in the middle of it, that's when it can be so hard to pull ourselves out, right? Just like you said, and because we get and collaboration doesn't even seem like an option in that moment, and so I think that's the thing. When we can really believe in that power, we can really believe there is that other option, then we can be more likely to go towards it in those difficult moments.
It feels very dangerous. I think it feels very dangerous to remove yourself from a power struggle because like I was saying, when we're locked into that, like, you know, defensive and offensive type of a stance with somebody, it feels like stepping out of that power struggle would be conceding a loss. And then it also feels like that might be opening ourselves to whatever next attack that person might be planning.
And especially with our kids, they're not true.
No.
Right?
With adults, so I want to focus on a whole nother gamut working with the relational tools with adults. But with our children, I just want to say point blank and pretty much like across the board.
Yeah.
With our children, any of those fears of manipulation, any of those fears that they're just going to walk all over you and just disrespect you and all of that. If we're co-collaborating with our children and really working together with them, those fears are not something that you're very likely to encounter. In fact, you know, I'd go as far as saying that they're fairly close to an impossibility given the existing power dynamics that exist within parent-child relationships.
Yeah. And you know, it's a lot like martial arts. In martial arts, if someone's throwing a punch at you, you don't meet that punch with equal force in the opposite direction. Then you just like, you're going to break your fist or break your face or whatever. You want to absorb and redirect that power that's coming at you. That feels like an attack. And then it's so much safer, but force against force is always going to cause conflict. So I want to just offer a couple of ideas about how to shift the energy in that moment, because that's the thing, you know, like the philosophy, without the philosophy, you may not believe it's worth putting the effort in. But once you believe it, once you buy into it, and this podcast is largely for people who have kind of bought into the gentle parenting idea and the work that we do. And once you've bought into the idea, okay, I want to shift power struggles with my kids. I listened to Sujai and Vivek for 45 minutes. Tell me why. And it's a good idea. So I want to shift it. But then my kid says, they refuse to clean their room, and I ask them to clean their room and I get upset, and then I want to take the stuff away. And then I want to, you know, like find different ways to force them to clean their room. And then I get into this big power struggle with them, and then everything like degrades. So in that moment when the argument is happening and you have a child and then you have an adult, but you have the inner child of the adult also. Hey, that's where I was going with that before. You have the inner child of the adult also. So instead of having an adult and an eight-year-old, you have an adult, an eight-year-old, and then two eight-year-olds. And it's usually the two eight-year-olds that are really locked in the power struggle. But the adult trying to protect their own inner eight-year-old against this actual eight-year-old, none of it really makes sense, right? When you think about it logically, but emotionally, we just got caught up in it. So now imagine this. So I say, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I recognize it. I'm not blaming myself for it, but what can I do? So here are a couple of things. Number one is pattern interruption. You set up a relational pattern with your kid, a communication pattern with your kid, a power dynamic pattern with your kid that's been set. And it takes very little time for something to get set, you know? You do it just a few times and boom, there's a pattern, especially if it's unconscious. And so pattern interruption can be really helpful. So you can, pattern interruption can come in different ways. So you notice the tension building, the power struggle is starting. There's a yes, no, yes, no, yes, I will. Yes, you will. No, I won't. This is starting to happen. Number one that you can do is to stop and breathe. Now, I know all these are an effort. I'm saying in advance, these are all effort. So we'll just accept that. So number one is to stop, slow down and breathe. Recognize that things don't have to be resolved right now in this way, at this moment. Lose the sense of urgency around it. And maybe even take a time out for yourself, parent time out. Let your kid do what they want, but take a parent time out. Find yourself again. Empathize with yourself, like Sujai, you were saying earlier, and really connect. And then go back to your kid and say, hey. And then you could use like some NVC. I have a need around this and you have a need around this. It's wonderful that we're both human and we both have needs. And it's even more wonderful if as a family, we care about each other's needs. So I really want to care about your need around this. And I'd love for you to care about mine. And what can we do? And some version of that, depending on their age, depending on your language style, depending on your dynamic. But that conversation has gold in it, you know, and you won't work right. It won't be easy right away. But that conversation has gold in it. Thank you, Marshall Rosenberg. So that's one thing, you know, really slowing down, focusing on what's real at this moment, everything. Sometimes things have to be resolved right away, but it's rare. A lot of the time we can take a step back and go, oh, let's look deeper at this situation. Another one is SMABO. And I always like to talk about SMABO. And I just want to say SMABO is Small Moments Affect Big Ones. That's my acronym that I love. And you love it too. And SMABO is where You know, power struggles, we often think of power struggles as those big yelling matches, but little power struggles happen all the time. When I watch parents interact with their kids at the grocery store and on the playground or wherever, just walking down the street in stores, I see little power struggles. The kid picks it up and picks up some ketchup and puts it in the wrong shelf. Put that back in the other shelf. Kid drops a thing, watch where you're doing. Bumps in, watch for other people. Bumps in against somebody, watch for other people. Like there's always these little moments where the power dynamic between them is being reinforced. And if you can use those little moments more consciously to create that sense of being on the same team, to create that sense of being real support to each other and really seeing each other. And like Sujai, you said earlier about seeing that we're all really trying our best. Then all of a sudden you build up, instead of building up layers of those power struggles that explode at a time when you really need cooperation, you build up these layers of cooperation, of connection, using SMABO, using all the small moments of life that the big ones already, there's like this comfort there. You know, and I'm with kids, I'm like that all the time. Kids, when I really work on the small moments with them, even though I just spend an hour with the kid and I'm focusing on all those small moments, and then some big thing happens, they like look to me like, what do you want me to do? I'll do anything you want. You know, like, what do you think is the right thing? Because they trust me, right? And you know that too. Kids are like that with you too. Like all the neighborhood kids come to you, Sujai, and they tell you all their things and ask you for support because they know that's what they're going to get from you.
You know, power dynamics is really like, it's one of my favorite topics. And yeah, definitely children tend to, whether they're my nieces and nephews, whether they're my own children, or whether they're neighborhood children tend to have a lot of trust for me and look towards me when they have a problem, because they can trust me to help them work through the problem in really comprehensive ways and to not judge them for having had a problem to begin with, and see the problem, you know, really, really clearly with them to help them troubleshoot for solutions and hold space for them through the pain as well. Because when we have a problem and we make a mistake and this stuff is going on, you know, that's something that I'd really, really like for parents to remember too, is that when our children make a mistake, they're struggling, they have a problem, and they're having a lot of pain around that. Generally speaking, most human beings, when they're struggling, they make a mistake, they have a problem, they're going to have some pain around that. And so our goal is to truly help them so that they can find ways to make things better, so that they're not feeling as much pain around it, so that they feel as self-aligned and good with the outcome as they possibly can in any given situation. You know, the tools that I would offer to a parent wanting to step out of power cycles is, first, I'd really establish extremely clearly that our children are allowed to have boundaries. They're allowed to say no. They're allowed to not want to do something and be supported in that. Even if it's something that would be typically considered rude, like not going to Thanksgiving dinner or not giving grandma a kiss. I guess the kiss would go over into the autonomy. And the autonomy is really important too. That's another thing we want to establish and work with our children really young, is that their autonomy is acceptable. Their autonomy is okay. And we respect their autonomy. And we also ask them to respect our autonomy. And we work together on this autonomy respecting thing. A little bit more comprehensively, when we go into any kind of a relational situation with somebody that we have a history with, somebody that we have a past with, which is pretty much everybody that we deal with in our everyday lives, whether that's our children, our spouses, our siblings, our family members, and even people from work, you know, our coworkers and our bosses and all of these people, we create these relational dynamics. And because of that, we have relational biases. And because of those relational biases, we often interact almost exactly the same as we did the last time with people. We create cycles and scripts of the way that we go into managing situations with people. So if there's somebody that we come across a lot of power struggles with, or we're constantly kind of butting heads with and having a hard time really seeing and navigating that relationship together. If we can see the cycles really clearly, if we can just take a look at that relationship and the way that we respond to it and the way that we're interacting in it and the biases that we're bringing to the relationship and the ways that we're perpetuating a cycle that happens with this person, whether that's an adult sitting or whether that's a child and you're trying to work around bedtime and you constantly have this power struggle that you go into, and you know, you already know that you think that that child's going to push back against bedtime, and then all of a sudden this script plays out the exact same way that it did the last six nights in a row. And you know, there are ways, simply by evaluating the biases that you're bringing in, the assumptions that you made before you even said, hey, it's bedtime, the fears that you had that you were going to get pushback and all of that stuff. And by evaluating it, having a look at those biases that you're bringing in and also the child's reaction to the situation and all of that, you can literally take a look at the script that you've created with your child. So instead of engaging in the power struggle with them, you can literally take a step back from that situation and be good. You're clear. You're golden. You just step in, you crumble up that script, you throw it away, you let go of those biases, and you find a whole new way to address bedtime. And it comes right out of you and them and a collaborative way of solving this problem you have, instead of being stuck back in this cycle where, you know, everything was still just kind of playing out almost exactly the way that you expected it to play out. And there wasn't a whole lot of different interaction that would occur around this situation. And we can't have that different action or reaction until we address the way that we're managing the situation. And then we can pull ourselves back from that power struggle and find new solutions that are just absolutely, they'll change the way that you interact, not only with your children, not only how the bedtime routine goes, but when you become aware of those cycles and those ways that we interact with people and move yourself back just enough to find a new way to interact, it opens doors that you didn't even know were there before.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Really, that transformation is a beautiful thing. And it's a gradual thing, and it requires consistent work, which is why we do a podcast every week, which is why I go, you know, we go live every week. We do coaching calls every week, and we do meditations every week. That's why. Because it really is an ongoing journey, and I'm still on the journey, and my kid's 23. So, you know, it's a lifetime of looking at ourselves, looking at the situation, making adjustments, and learning and growing. And having that learning mindset, you know, being open to that learning, being open to change. So often you see people, especially online, you can see people, as soon as any of their ideas are challenged, they take it so personally and they get so angry and so defensive. And then they say, you say they're defensive, I'm not defensive. So then there's no way to break through that. And that happens early on, you know. One of my one-liners is, which is one of my favorites, I didn't teach my daughter what to think, I taught her how to think. And that once you think about how you think, then it's really hard to get defensive, really, really hard. And you know when you are, that it's like I said before, that little 8-year-old inside or that 4-year-old inside that's activated, and you can give that person love and empathy inside. Give the little one inside of you love and empathy so you can be more present in the moment and really see what's going on. So, because, you know, power struggles is a topic that we can go on and on and on about. I have actually a whole workshop, a 2-hour workshop that I gave on it that's online. And if you go to my YouTube channel, you can find it, Meaningful Ideas. There's a whole workshop that I gave on reducing power struggles. And it goes into a lot of detail about the things that Sujai and I have been talking about. Although I think we also went into some brand new details because I gave that workshop in 2018. So I think we covered a lot of new stuff in this talk as well. And so we're going to take a little bit of a break. You can hear our good friend Margie play some guitar. And then Sujai is going to come back and talk a little bit about power and bullying and her thoughts around that. And so I look forward to that. Hey.
And we're back, folks. So I'm going to go ahead and talk today a little bit about bullying, which, as I was mentioning at the beginning of this podcast, is really deeply intertwined with Vivek's topic of power struggles and power dynamics. I want to start out by saying, in regards to bullying, that I feel like bullying is an issue that when we're addressing it at the child level, you know, clearly we're going to need to be running interference and making sure that kids are not harming each other. But when we're addressing the core of the issue, when we're going past the surface of what's going on and what we're managing and dealing with in the moment, that's that surface issue, we really have to go past that surface issue and get to the core of the reason that this thing is happening in order to break it down and bring about change on a level where we can actually avoid getting into as many intense situations of bullying as possible. For me, I feel like when we dig past all of the layers of everything that we're looking at and we just really break it down to the core of what I see going on. And I want to preface by saying that I have dealt with a lot of bullying throughout my life. Not only bullying directed at me, which I have dealt with quite a bit of through my school years, in my home, around, you know, in my childhood home, growing up, there was quite a bit of bullying. One of my primary bullies throughout my entire childhood was my stepbrother. So it was something that I lived with, and it also intertwined very deeply into the dynamics that I had with my parents because of the dynamic that was going on with my stepbrother. And I also dealt with bullying in the school setting quite a bit. And as a coach and somebody who works with parents and somebody who is available for children to talk to and help children through their situations, I've also seen quite a bit of bullying and, you know, not only directed at children, also quite a bit of bullying directed at myself as an adult and at other adults as well. You know, it's a very complex thing that we're talking about. And when I break it all down and I look at everything that I know about bullies and bullying and the issue of bullies and bullying, what I see is that it's an issue that needs to be addressed at a core level within the adults. Now, for several reasons, I say that. One of those reasons is that the way that we are raising and socializing children, and I talked about that a little bit in the first half of this podcast, is that we're raising children in ways that are kind of bullying. I mean, our parenting tactics that come down to heavy-handed dynamics where, you know, for whatever reason, for whatever our intentions, forever, however good or, you know, whatever our intentions and how we want this to be, when we resort to heavy-handed parenting, my way or the highway, when we resort to not allowing children to have boundaries and autonomy, when we are continually forcing children to do things that they don't want to do because we think we know better than them and we have power and control over them. Newsflash, folks, I'm sorry, as sensitively and with as much respect as I can, you know, muster around the topic, we're being bullies. Those parenting tactics, they're kind of bullying. They're using power to override somebody's basic human rights, their autonomy, their boundaries, their right to be part of a discussion, their right to say yes or no, you know. And
Sujai,
yes?
let me interrupt for 1 second. I just want to offer to the listeners that if anybody out there at this moment is feeling a little bit defensive, because it would be totally naturally to feel that way, just pause the recording after I finish saying this. Pause the recording, take a breath, And then start again, even if it's just a little defensiveness, and just to give yourself a moment so that you can be open to hearing what Sujaa has to say. Because, you know, like, if we can own the idea of that she's sharing, that this kind of coercive parenting is bullying, we can really do something about it. We can make such great changes. It's hard to do that when we're coming in with defensiveness. So just take that moment if you need to. I do this all the time in my personal practice. Take that moment, empathize with the defensiveness, let it go, and then come back and then listen. Because it's like, this is a good thing to be open for.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, I certainly do not say this with any judgment. I really want everybody to know that this is the way that we were socialized.
Yeah,
this is the way that we were taught. This is our legacy. We were given this, like,
thousands of years it's been handed down to us, right?
Absolutely. And breaking it is, it's hard work and it's big. And it does take some painful self-evaluation and going, whoa, yeah, you know, that thing might have been true, and I might have participated in some kind of a behavior that I don't feel really comfortable with. And we do have these big feelings come up around a realization, you know. I used to spank my children. I used to be a very explosive parent, and you know, admitting to myself, going from, you know, I was using a parenting tool that a lot of people find acceptable and it just wasn't, and I'm not going to use it, to actually telling myself and with love and compassion, you know, I don't judge myself for who I was yesterday. In fact, I love who I was yesterday, because who I was yesterday is a guide towards who I am today, right? And so when I think about that, you know, it was quite a jump for me to go from, well, yeah, this was a parenting tool I discarded, to actually owning it and saying, yeah, you know, I was abusing my children. I was, by that, you know, very thought pattern, I had become an abuser. And it was really painful. And it was a process for me to get to the place where I could actually look at that and say that and feel that and own it without a lot of shame. In fact, it's something that this might be one of the most clearest times that I've just said it without any hesitation and just put it out there for the world to hear it in that way.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Because we do carry shame about things that we think that we did wrong. Mistakes that we made. Times that we weren't in alignment with ourselves. That's our remorse. And that's a healthy part of us so that we can make change around it. And so I think our first reaction to any time is, you know, it's going to be that defensiveness. Well, I'm not a bad person. And I really want people to know that I don't think you're a bad person. You know, your mistakes, they don't make you a bad person. They make you a whole person. They make you part of a human, living a human experience. And, you know, it's okay.
Sujaa, I got to interrupt again. I have to repeat that. Your mistakes don't make, what did you say? Your mistakes don't make you a bad person. They make you a whole person. That sent shivers up and down my back. That's brilliant. I love it so much. Oh, thank mm-hmm. you. That's really good. I wanted to stop and have a moment with that, because it's like being able to feel that, like, that my mistakes are what make me human, and how I deal with them is what make me a conscious human, you know? And that's just a good one. Really, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So then if we can see ourselves and hold ourselves and our mistakes in that way, like whole personness, right? Then we can really accept the times that we fell short and use those, or, you know, and fell short. I don't even like saying that. The times that we didn't do things that were really in alignment with us. And we can just use that to find ways to self-align a little bit more, to do a little bit different next time, to do something that feels a little bit better to us next time. And it's a learning process. So moving past what I think is one of the really big core issues of bullying, which is the way that parents are addressing children and allowing children to have their own personal autonomy, boundaries, and power within the relationship is really a big component of bullying. And now I want to talk about some other components of bullying that do exist, because, you know, like most things, it really, there's so many different layers and there's so many different levels. Another thing that we as parents often do that can perpetuate cycles of bullying is when we carry relational biases, particularly if we have, let's say we have one child that, you know, we always see as the weak link, or maybe they're the compliant one. So, you know, the squeaky wheel is always getting the more grease, and we have this other child that's not making a bunch of a scene and they're always catching the short end of the stick. Or maybe it's because we have these relational biases and we always think that they're the problem one. Or, you know, there's a lot of reasons why when we go into helping our children with altercations, we often send the message to those children that they are the problem, that the big faults within them, and through no intention of our own. Again, I really want to reiterate that I'm really not trying to place blame here, but through these relational biases, we often place these blames on one child, and then that child starts getting this inner voice where they really think there's something wrong with them and they think they're the problem. And that starts to perpetuate from them going out as they lose that sense of security and that sense of self. And as they're going out into the world, a lot of times they're projecting all of that insecurity and all of that pain, which can become another aspect to the bullying, you know. And then, again, I got to say that when we're addressing the issue of bullying, I want to address it at the adult level, because the children, they're learning relational tools from us. We are the ones that get to choose new relational tools, learn these new relational tools, and teach them to our children. Because as I said, this is our legacy. We don't have all of these other relational tools all readily available to us because we weren't taught them. Lucky for you, you're here. You're with us, you're doing this work with Vivek and I, and we've got a whole passel of relational tools that we will teach you that you can learn to implement for yourself, and you can help your children learn to implement them in their lives.
Going to jump in again for a sec. I want to plug this podcast at this moment, because when you said relational tools and we can help you, there's just subscribing to this podcast and going from the beginning and listening from the beginning would be revolutionary and transformative for you. If you can just listen to one episode a day or something like that, because there's just so much information and so many tools and so many strategies and so many concepts we've shared over the last year and a half or so that we've been doing this, just that alone could transform. So please take the time to do that. It'll really be useful, because there's a lot of really good information out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. And we are so happy to help you, whether that is at, you know, the podcast level and you're listening back, whether that's through the groups, whether that's through the subscription site, whether, you know, you're getting one-on-one with us. However it is, we are totally here and really excited and willing to work with you and help you apply these relational tools in your life in healthy ways with everybody, you know, your children, your spouses, your family members. And so the parenting and the way that we're approaching children and that power dynamic within the home is a really big aspect. And again, you know, children, they don't have very much autonomy and they don't have very much power. And so when they're going out in the world and they're in a school setting and then they're in other situations, there's a lot of the same stuff going on, you know, other adults, teachers and coaches and other people's parents that are all playing into certain dynamics and exerting power over your children. And a lot of that, you know, there's different layers to it, because it's not just what's happening with the autonomy overriding and the lack of boundaries and all of that that happens at home. But there's this other new layer that happens out there in the world. You love your children. You have their best interest at heart. you're working through things with them. Unfortunately, when our kids go out in the world, they're subject to all kinds of people. And some of those people have biases and preconceived notions that could really be harmful to your children. And adults, from my own experience, can really perpetuate a lot of hierarchies and power systems and painful, harmful ideas that could be really adding an extra layer to the bullying that your child is receiving at school. To clarify a little bit, oftentimes I talk about things and it feels a little bit too abstract for me. And so oftentimes putting it into an actual experience that I've been through, or an actual, you know, an example of something that might play out, is that a lot of teachers, coaches, people in other places of power over your child out in the world, you know, where they're at on their journey may be very far from where you're at on your journey. And they may be doing things that are classist or ableist or in all kinds of ways racist, you know, and in all kinds of ways causing harm to your child. You know, for example, one example, when I was a child, my family was very poor. We lived off grid. We didn't have running water. And the teachers at school, they made that apparent. They talked about that in the classroom. They talked about it with the students. And they didn't hold space for it in a way that, you know, it was an acceptable thing that we were financially underprivileged. In fact, they used it to make fun of us. So, you know, the classism that teachers perpetuated, they didn't just not protect me from the bullying.
It's heartbreaking.
They didn't just allow for the bullying. They actually created the platform for it and gave children the fodder.
Ah, that's terrifying to me, Sujai.
It is terrifying, and it's something that we really need to pay attention to and be listening for. If our children are really struggling at school, and you know, a lot of the adults that I've talked to over the years about the bullying that they endured growing up, they report the same thing to me, is that adults often created the platform and offered the children the fodder. They were the ones pointing out that they were physically or emotionally different than the others. They were the ones noting, you know, children aren't noting as much, you know, the quality of somebody's clothing or the so-called intelligence of something that they've said, or, you know, all of these different things that adults, in fact, are the ones pointing out and giving to the children. And instead of helping children feel more comfortable, like in some situations, one of the situations where a child might be getting bullied quite a bit is if they need any kind of medical equipment, any kind of gear that helps them, you know, with breathing, maybe with walking, maybe with something that's, you know, adjusting their joints, but any kind of medical assistive gear. Sometimes that can feel really uncomfortable for kids because they're not used to that kind of stuff and they haven't seen a lot of that. And teachers, instead of helping kids get comfortable with that medical assistive equipment, will make fun of that equipment too. And that's been a situation that I've heard repeatedly from people who have had to use any kind of assistive equipment, assistive medical equipment throughout their school years, was that, you know, the teachers would point out how awkward and uncomfortable that thing was and give that to the children to make fun of them. And and you know, I do want to address, of course, that, you know, there are tons of amazing teachers and coaches and amazing people in wonderful places looking after our children out there. And I think that what's really important when we're talking about these levels of bullying that I'm talking about that are often coming off at the adult level is that, you know, it's not everybody and not all adults are bad. And I'm really not trying to place blame on anybody. But what I'd really, really, really like to impress upon all of you is that if your child is telling you that they're having a problem with a teacher, if they're telling you that a teacher or a coach or somebody in a place of power in their life is being complicit to or a companion in the bullying, please listen to your child. And please, you know, pay attention and don't assume that because that person is in a place of power or because they have some kind of credentials that they're automatically going to have, you know, checked their ableism and their racism and their classism and that they're going to be treating children with equality and respect within the classroom. You know, and if a child is telling you that an adult is misusing their power, I'd really encourage you to please listen and try and make some adjustments around that, whether that means trying to, you know, go around that, trying to maybe talk to that adult first. And if that's not working out, maybe go around that adult and try and get the child moved into a different class. Whatever it is that we can help the child, because if they're telling us, you know, and it comes down to really believing our children when something happens. My now 16-year-old, I think he was in the second grade, and he told me that this teacher was like, that she had singled him out and that she was yelling at him constantly. And he said she was saying some really awful things to him. And they were so bad. They were so bad that I didn't believe him. Now, I really
That's
thought.
That's intense. That's really intense.
Yeah. Wow. And I really thought that if a teacher was doing this, and this was given my own experience with teachers being pretty cruel to me.
Yeah.
And I really thought that if a teacher was doing this at the level that he claimed that she was doing it, that there was no way she would be getting away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until several months later when another student's mother approached me in the parking lot of the school and said, look, I really think you should know about this situation because she singled your son out and she is awful to him. And I was like, wow. Like, you know, even with all of my experience and everything that I knew and everything, I still didn't believe this teacher was getting away with what he said she was getting away with.
Yeah.
And it took another adult to come and tell me that was happening to trigger my realization that indeed my kid needed to be moved out of that classroom because he was getting bullied by a teacher.
Right.
And, you know, that's really the thing is if we're coming from this place where we believe in power dynamics and power hierarchies and that people in places of power are going to use that power with integrity, and we want to believe that people in places of power aren't doing these things and we're not listening to the victims and we're perpetuating the cycles of abuse. And I want to go another step further is that when a child is emotionally distressed, they're going to start acting out. When any person is emotionally distressed, the more emotionally distressed they become, the more likely it is that they're going to be acting out. And as, you know, if we continue to subject them to that emotional distress and they're unable to get themselves out of the situation, then they're going to continue to act out. And that might look like them pushing back against the people that are bullying them. And that might look like them actually, you know, bullying somebody that's smaller than them, that they have physical power over, where they can feel like they have a little bit of control. And so from all of these heavy-handed adult things that we may be doing, and again, like, really want to reiterate that I'm not saying that everybody is doing those things. We can hold ourselves accountable for them.
Right.
But through all these heavy-handed adult things that we may be doing, the overriding of autonomy, the overriding of boundaries, the not allowing of opinions, the not hearing, the ignoring the fact that these things are happening, we are actually pushing the child into a place where they're this hurting ball of anger and frustration and never enough, and they're ready to throw and lash that energy around out at everybody around them, and it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy and a self-perpetuating cycle.
Back in the day, I used to do anti-bullying workshops in schools, and I would do, and at youth organizations, and I would either give workshops or I'd do speeches, and it didn't matter what the context was, I always had a section that was entitled "The Bully is Also in Pain," because I wanted everyone to see, included, because I knew there were always bullies in the audience as well as victims, and that often one person can play both roles, like you say, in their lives, actually almost always. In some way or the other, that we acknowledge their humanity, you know? And it's just like when my mom does her workshops in prison, she acknowledges the prisoners' humanity so deeply that they start to see it in themselves in a way they never had before. And I think that's what you're pointing to with how we work with kids, is believing them, supporting them, and seeing them in this deep, deep way so that it awakens that that spirit, that conscience inside themselves.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And not holding ourselves accountable for the way that when we interact with somebody with bias, it's hard not for them to not feel that bias and to take on those feelings. And it's really hard if somebody's been perceived as the problem, as the individual that creates it all, as the bully. You know, it's really hard for that bully to remove themselves from all of those biases and see the good in themselves. And so it be getting stuck in that cycle. It's all they know. They don't have a whole lot of options. And we're, you know, particularly when we're talking about somebody who's at an age where they just don't have a whole lot of power over their own lives and over themselves and over the things that they're subject to and the things that they're going through, you know. They don't have power at home. They don't have power at school. And a lot of the time, we're not even listening to them and we're not even hearing them and we're not addressing the problem. And at the same time, on top of it, we might be attaching that they really are the problem. And it compiles and compounds and just creates this thing. And there it is. And there's from there, there are things we can do, but it's a lot of healing and it's a healing process. And it really requires a team of hands-on healing to get past it. And if we really want to address bullying, we need to address it within the power dynamics, which is so great that we have these intertwining topics, because once we address the power dynamics and allow space and give other tools. And for me, this is really the important thing here that I want everybody to understand, that when we override someone's autonomy, override their boundaries, override their opinions, don't allow them to speak, don't hear them, we are shutting them down and not giving them other relational tools. We're teaching through modeling those relational tools, and that power equals compliance. And when we have power, we can get compliance, which means we can gain control of situations, which gives us some sense of control of our lives. When we respect autonomy, we respect boundaries, we respect opinions, we respect their voice, we listen to them, we hear them, we are empowering them with those relational tools. And they are more likely to be able to not only implement those tools for themselves, but to respect the boundaries, autonomies, and needs of others as well, because they know how it's done. They've seen it, and theirs are respected, and they can therefore use those tools to respect somebody else. But as long as they're being pushed into the power cycle, that's all they're getting, is the power cycle tools. And we have to give something else. Otherwise, that's all we've got. And I've been really doing a lot of unpacking around what I've noticed is that it seems like almost everybody, unless we've done a lot of unpacking around it, because including myself, we have this place where we get to punishment and we get to, yeah, that person is just bad and they're broken and we need to lock them up. We need to throw away the key. There's something terribly wrong with them and they're not safe for society. And, you know, and I'm not going to say that, you know, there's no situation where somebody is just, you know, so that there's not a whole lot of other societal solutions at this point besides locking them up and throwing away the key, I guess. But for me, I don't really, I've been doing a lot of unpacking around these ideas and I don't really get there to this place where everything needs to be about punishment and oppression, but most people do. So we, most people, and like I said, I did a lot of unpacking around it so that I could see that there's generally almost always another solution before we get to the point where we're doing that. Unfortunately, society as a whole, pretty much the tools are, if you have the power, then you oppress. If you have the power, then you hold somebody to this and you have them do things your way. And that's just, that's the self-perpetuating tool. And that is in its essence and core, that is using your power to push somebody else around, which at its core definition is bullying. So for me, again, remove ourselves from the place where we're doing the bullying, offer other relational tools, respect their boundaries and their autonomy, respect their needs. And when stuff does come up for your child, when they're managing difficult relational dynamics, whether that's within the home or within the school, try to help your child navigate that system with as little judgment as possible. You know, how can you help your child navigate what they're going through without turning any of these kids into bad people? Because they're not. They're just kids and they're just trying to go through something that's difficult and they're trying out these relational tools that we've handed down to them as our legacy that we've handed on to them. And,
you know, Sujai, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
You know, there's this thing that that I used to work with in schools, because I've done a lot of volunteering in schools. When my daughter was growing up, I was in school all the way from kindergarten to grade eight. I was in school almost every day, at least 2-3 times a week. I have my own classroom. I taught full classes. They just let me. I was the chair of the school council, so I was always around kids. I was always around teachers. Assistant coached all the sports teams because my kid was a sports person, and music because she was a musician and so am I. So we're always all, I'm always there, always there. All the kids knew me. In some ways, some of those kids, I saw them every week all their lives from kindergarten up to grade eight, some of those kids, right? And so one of the things that we used to do is something called a positive detention. And a positive detention is because the reason we call it that was because people who really, really were insisting that there be a detention. So at least we had the name in there so that people would ease off. Okay, at least they're getting a detention. But the idea of it is to do some kind of activity, to do usually, hopefully, with someone who's got some kind of mediation training and understands kids and doesn't have judgment and shame, like that kind of thing, like me. And usually what you do is you create some kind of situation where the kids, the bully and the kid who's the victim, have to interact with each other in such a way, either sometimes it's conversation, sometimes it's a physical thing they do together, but something that helps them see each other as people, helps them feel empathy for themselves and for each other. Because I was bullied relentlessly for years in junior high and wouldn't have survived, I think, if my mom hadn't convinced my dad to sell the house and we moved out of the city. So I know very deeply what it's like to have been bullied. And when I think about it, you know, the teachers telling the other kids off never did anything, trying to protect me, never did anything. When I really think about it, I think that if those kids have been able to see me as a person and helped me to see them again as a person, I think we could have seen each other. I think we could have shifted things, but it's such a radically different way of dealing with, and you're talking about getting out of the punitive mindset. This is getting out of the punitive mindset, right? If my kid was being bullied, I would want to think about it first, but I would want to walk into the school and say, I want a meeting with the other parents and the kids, and I want to connect, and I want to understand each other, and I want to share our hearts with each other. And I would want that kind of a meeting, and I would ask for it to be mediated, you know? And because it seems to me that that kind of interaction is the only thing that's going to make long-term change. Because when we approach it from the same mindset as the problem, we're just amplifying it, you know?
Absolutely, yes. I think that oftentimes, you know, I talk about that a couple times around fear, but oftentimes it, when we're scrambling to keep something from happening, those steps that we're taking are often ones that perpetuate the exact thing that we're trying to keep from happening coming right into being a reality. And, you know, it's interesting because we do have the intentions that we're really trying to step away from this thing and we're trying to change things and we want to make things better. And yet somehow the choices that we're making oftentimes are bringing it to fruition. And so just slowing down just a little bit around the ways that we're thinking and taking the time to really evaluate it can really shift that for us.
Yeah.
And seeing things at their core too, you know, when we're in a punitive mindset, we often see very surface things and we're hanging around the surface of the issues. And so it's kind of logical to want to be punitive if we're hanging around the surface, because it feels like it's the Band-Aid, right? Like, you know, there's this issue. And, you know, there's this issue that's this behavior, and we're seeing the behavior itself, which is a manifestation of the core issue, not the core issue. But at the same time, it kind of makes sense to punish that behavior because we're seeing the behavior itself. Then the behavior feels pretty yucky.
It sure can seem to make sense, especially when we are looking at the world through that lens.
Right. And it feels really logical from that mindset. Yeah. But if we dig past just a little bit, and we get a layer off and we go, okay, so I saw a behavior, and let me put this into an example. I saw a behavior. I saw my 2-year-old was playing with this toy and another 2-year-old came to take the toy and my 2-year-old hit them. Now, it would make a lot of sense if we're looking at that top issue of our 2-year-old hitting to punish that behavior and to be like, no, we don't hit. Hitting is horrible. But if we're looking at the core issues, then we see something else. We see that our 2-year-old, who had very little relational tools, didn't know how to communicate very well, didn't know how to protect themselves very well, and they were feeling intimidated. They're feeling a little bit afraid. Maybe they were feeling possessive of their thing and they didn't want it taken. You know, they could have been feeling a lot of things and they lashed out to protect themselves. Now, does that suddenly, and now if we're still looking at the surface issues, then suddenly that just flipped the script and made the other kid the bad guy. Because the other kid came in and like tried to take their toys. That's not true either. That kid didn't have relational skills either. They're 2-year-olds. They're going back and forth. They're learning this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So if we get down to the core, what do we see? We see 2 2-year-olds that are learning how to relate.
Exactly.
So then what would you logically do when you see 2 2-year-olds learning how to relate? Well, you get down on their level and you relate with them, right?
You guide them.
Right. And suddenly it's all logical and it's just as logical to get down and teach these kids a couple of relational tools, guide them through the relational, make sure they're not hitting each other and let them figure it out.
Yeah.
Than it does to punish either one of these children, because neither one of these children was actually acting out in bad faith, from bad humanness, from wanting to hurt somebody, from just being mean or bad or any of those things that we might have attached to those behaviors that might make us want to punish one of those children.
Yeah.
all we see is these two little kids that they really didn't have much else. And so clearly, logically, then logically, the next step is to get down there. And that's what happens when we peel off the layers and we stop seeing the behavior that was the hitting or the taking of the toy, the things that we would want to punish.
Yeah.
Core of the issue.
Totally. And I would take that to, I would take that to older ages too, because it's the same thing. You know, if you're 15-year-old, if your 15-year-old steals someone's bike, or your 18-year-old, you know, I don't know, what do 18-year-olds do? And they could get in trouble, gets into a big fight and gets in prison, right? Or your 13-year-old stays out late and doesn't tell you where they are. Or your 10-year-old swears at you and tells you to F off. Like, there's so many things over and over and over again that we can shift and choose to see that underlying pain that's there. And then when this is the same thing with, you know, with bullying, rather than, like, I remember with my mom, we had this one ringleader of all the bullies that kind of rallied everybody into a frenzy every day. And it was literally the whole school. I had like one friend in the whole school, and this guy lived down the street from me. So it was even dangerous for me to walk to school. And so one day my mom in desperation went to his place and knocked on the door and said, "I just want to let you know that your son has been bullying my kid and making his life hell." And she was like, "Oh, my son, no, he's a darling. He would never do anything like that. He's the sweet." She still remembers this exact moment so clear for her. "He's the sweetest thing. You must be wrong. There's no way." And she shut the door in his face. Part of the reason that people could do that is because they think that in their mind, if they admit their kid's bullying, their kid's a bad person, which goes back to the good, bad person thing. But if we can see our kids, even if they're doing the bullying, if we can see that the bully is in pain, that our kid is in pain, and that they're acting from some need that's not being expressed, some wound that needs healing, some feeling, some desire, some something, right? And we go underneath. We are so, first of all, we're doing the big favor by not ignoring it. Secondly, we're doing him a bigger favor by not approaching it punitively or aggressively. And we're certainly helping the other kid out as well. And probably every person that my kid interacts with, if I can help them heal what it is that's causing them to want to do this kind of thing and to hold them in love and compassion so they feel me, you know? And I think that if we can do that with the young kids, with the older kids, with the one who's suffering and the one, both are suffering, but the one who's bullying, the one who's being bullied, like these tools of empathy and connection and compassion and listening and helping them get deep into where they're at, you know, what they feel, it can make a huge difference in the life of these kids. And I think that bullying is such a deep topic that we could easily do another hour on it. We could easily do another whole podcast on it. And I think we probably will. And I think that, you know, it's a subject that we will address again, because it's really, really powerful. Yeah.
You know, one final thought that I would like to add about bullying at this juncture in time, as we're getting ready to close up here, is that bullying during the teen years, it is very deep and very complex, and rarely there's any one person within the scenario who's completely so innocent, so to speak. What I want to say, though, about that bullying during the teen years is that we do have a very heavy burden as parents to try and be as present as possible and try and help our children with what they're struggling with as much as possible, because I just feel it's really important that parents take into note that during those teen years, when the brain is going through a lot of growth, our bodies are going through a lot of growth, we're trying to find our place in the world, and we oftentimes are struggling with a sense of own worth and self-worth. And what happens and how the adults manage what happens can have an impact on your children for the rest of their lives. And I say that from a place of somebody who is 44 years old and recently just trying to disentangle some of the bullying that I went through as a child and some of the ways that it impacted even the choices that I made as far as relationships and allowing myself to and I don't want to say allowing myself because that sure sounds like placing a lot of blame on the victim, but, you know, choosing a relationship for myself that was one that was full of a lot more bullying for the next 15 years of my life. And I really want people to know that being present for your kids, being that mentor, being their voice, helping them through it, not seeing them as the bad guy, trying to help them with the relational tools and the layers of things that are going on and being present through it is really something that it can make a lifelong difference. And I just feel that that's really important to put that out there, that the impacts from teen bullying, they can be very far reaching.
Yeah, thank you, Sujai. Such an important point. I think I need to go meditate after this one. This was really emotional. So we discussed some heavy things and the interaction between power dynamics, power struggles, and the model we set there, and then bullying and how it carries out, and then feeling that sense of, even when we're dealing with something as intense as bullying, we're both the bully and victim, to go under the surface and to look at ourselves really deeply so that we're not reacting, and look at our kids really deeply so that we can help them the best way possible. And so that's it, everyone. Thank you so much. We would love for you to join us on our membership space, where we do really personal and intimate parent support. We have coaching calls every week, group coaching calls and group meditations. I'm doing a group coaching call in just 4 hours from now. And we also do a live broadcast where we do a class every week, a couple of classes every week on different topics. We go into detail on all those videos. There's like, I think something like almost 90 videos or something like that, just dedicated for the members. And all these resources and worksheets and processes that we have created that really help parents. It's a beautiful space. You just go to gentleparentsunite.com and you can find us. The price to join us is very reasonable. We charge a sliding scale, so you can just go to the site and check that out. And we love you very much. We're here every week. Please subscribe and share this podcast around, and we will see you next week. Have a good week, Sujai. Have a good week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week. Thank you.